Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. The 3D television era rolls on tomorrow night with college football featuring number one team Oregon. How fast will 3D become must-see TV? All a matter of quality programming. Bring it on and we'll watch, some experts say. Others warn the content won't come until the 3D home universe is big enough, viable enough. Classic stalemate, and our guest today has a plan to break the stalemate. We'll have the plan when Scalar Media partner and former National Football League executive Frank Hawkins joins me next. Also ahead, Conan settles in, The Simpsons aim for 500 episodes, and in our up segment, AMC won't cross the Rubicon. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Thanks for tuning us in on this November Friday. 62 wonderful degrees, very sunny here in the New York metro area. We invite you to be part of the program. All it takes is a phone call at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us on Blog Talk Radio. We have our chat room open right now. Guest 2657 in the room. So if you don't want to use the phone, use the chat room. Soon you do. Soon you address what's on your mind. Frank Hawkins from Scalar Media on 3D television, our subject and our guest. He's joining us shortly. But right now, news notes. Looks like Conan O'Brien's return to late-night programming via TBS is a solid one. Through three nights of week one, Conan is drawing about 2.5 million viewers on average. That compares with 910,000 viewers on average for the entire first season of Lopez Tonight at 11 p.m. on TBS. Since moving to midnight after Conan, Lopez Tonight is getting more than 1 million viewers an episode. 500 episodes and counting. That's what The Simpsons and fans of that long-running classic can be sure of next fall. Fox renewed the series through mid-2012, with episode 500 premiering around January as February. As Bart Simpson would himself say, don't have a cow, man. And now joining us live from New York, a former senior vice president with the National Football League and someone out to make 3D TV happen, a partner of Scalar Media, Frank Hawkins. Frank, welcome in.
Thank you. Glad to be here today.
At a conference on 3D 2 weeks ago, here's what you said in part. You said we're in the early trickle stage of 3D. Explain that.
We're in the early trickle stage of 3D for television. We are in the stage of steady content production for movies because there's a very different business model. With movies, 3D tickets cost more than 2D, making it profitable to shoot 3D movies. There are 2D and 3D movies that are shot simultaneously, released simultaneously, meaning that there is a business model where even if you're in my hometown of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which probably doesn't have a heck of a lot of 3D theaters, you can see the movie. But if you're in New York City where there's a ton of 3D theaters, you can see it in 3D. And there's financing in place to upgrade theaters to 3D capability. All this has come together over the last few years and has driven an explosion in 3D titles. Now you're actually seeing a problem in that the 3D theater conversion hasn't been fast enough, and 3D theaters are booked solid and sometimes double booked for a week, and as a result, 3D movies can't hang around as long as audience demand might exist for them. TV is an entirely different story. 3D TVs just went on sale to the general public really this past spring, March, when Panasonic and Samsung both rolled out 3D TVs. Sony is just rolling out now. They're reasonably priced. They're only a few hundred dollars more than the highest 2D only, highest priced, best 2D only TV. They're actually great TVs, and one thing that people listening to your show need to understand is they are 2D TVs that just recognize if the content source is 3D and automatically switch into 3D mode. So you can watch anything you want on these TVs. That's actually been a sort of barrier to adoption. But then you get into the next piece of the puzzle. There's 8,600-odd hours of time in the course of a year. And there's probably 500 to 1,000, maybe more than that, but not much more than that, hours of 3D content out there. Because 3D has been shot for IMAX, by and large. There have been periodic waves of 3D content in Hollywood, but they've only been waves, and there hasn't been a heck of a lot of 3D ordinary television content that's shot. As a result, there's only a trickle of content that's showing up on your TVs. Now, how do you change that? You have to improve production capability so that broadcast television shooting is more possible in 3D. That's got to be done quicker. It's got to be focused more on capturing it right or nearly perfect the first time. A movie can go through post-production for a year, making every shot flawless, but with a broadcast schedule, you can't afford to do that. The producers who are focused on how do I shoot 2D to greatest advantage need to start learning how to shoot 3D as well. Right now, they default into shooting the 2D first and then keeping their actors, talent, et cetera, for an extra couple days to shoot 3D, which makes it an extremely expensive proposition. And 3D broadcast cameras are just starting to get out there. Panasonic has a 3D camcorder that works great, but for the most part, there aren't 3D cameras, integrated cameras. You've got 3D rigs where you mount two cameras side by side, and there's very complicated computer software and mechanical adjustment systems to get the 3D effect right, and these are hugely expensive. As a result, for the moment, there isn't much 3D production going on, and the content that's available on 3D TVs is relatively slight. It's very similar.
Although we're going
to
see, Frank, a trickle more tomorrow, because Versus, the sports network owned by Comcast, is going to get into the game with college football, with Oregon, the number one team in the country, and a main contender for the bowl championship series against California. That could be a very surprising game because California is a pretty good team. What a lot of people don't understand, even folks who like 3D up to this point, is you need a separate camera crew. You also need a separate set of announcers. You can't just take the current 2D or high-definition version of, let's say, a Versus feed or an ESPN feed and run it as 3D.
Absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And sports, interestingly enough, was what drove HD adoption, HD television adoption. It's probably the least cost-effective thing to shoot in 3D, but it's still going to drive 3D adoption to a certain extent. You do need to shoot sports completely differently. Where you get compelling 3D is low down to the action, low angles, instead of what we used to call the high 40s, which are the cameras that you use to cover most football games. They're on the front of the middle deck in a stadium, and they look down on the field, so you get a broad panorama view. You shoot from there, you don't get much 3D effect. You shoot from the sidelines, and it's like, wow, I'm here on the sidelines at an NFL game. And that is the experience that people are going to come to crave over time, is feeling like you're being there on the sidelines where you've never been before. Or a project that we worked on was a 3D telecast of the U.S. Open tennis tournament. The low slot cameras behind the baseline, you felt like you were on court standing there with one of the line judges and watching two of the greatest players in modern tennis playing the game, Federer, Djokovic, and then Djokovic, Nadal. Great matches. They're available periodically on replays on DirecTV. I would urge you to check listings and check it out, because once you see it, it's going to be a life-changing experience for you.
Frank Hawkins from Scalar Media joining us today on Tomorrow We Televise, talking 3D television, which his company is involved in making happen. And you can be part of the program just by dialing in at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906. Or get into our chat room, and the sooner you do, either way, the sooner what you have to say gets addressed. Frank, at the Paul Kagan 3D conference here in New York a couple weeks ago, you came out with a game plan, if you will, for how 3D can work and become a mainstream medium. Before we get to that, as you mentioned, the 3D sets are pretty inexpensive, particularly compared to how high definition started. When you had high def sets that were $10,000 or above, you now have 3D sets that are available for like $1,500 to $3,000, a mere pittance, if you will. But one issue that has popped up has been the 3D glasses. Either the case of a lot of reports that 3D glasses cause nausea, cause headaches, and so on. Another is that the 3D glasses are not universally compatible with every 3D set that's out there. So with all the reports about headaches and nausea and so forth, I've seen a lot of these reports, and I've yet to see a barrage of anecdotal evidence of people actually dealing with that. Have you?
There has been a fair amount of research that's been done on this. There haven't been that many actual incidents of nausea. Essentially what's happening with 3D TV is you see 3D naturally by moving your eyes in a certain way. When you watch 3D TV, you don't move your eyes. Instead, the screen and the glasses do the work for you. It takes you a while to adjust to that. And sometimes you get transitory nausea feelings and so on and so forth while that happens. But the most comprehensive study that was done, and I urge your viewers to check it out, was just released this past Monday by ESPN. It was 2,700 hours of study during the World Cup. They did all sorts of biometric testing and so on and so forth. These effects were very much transitory while you were getting used to it. You can get nausea with bad 3D. One thing that I mentioned is you shoot 3D completely differently. Right now, sports directors are addicted to cuts. This is just an example from my former life. The Super Bowl a couple of years ago, there was a fumble return by the Pittsburgh Steelers, 100-yard fumble return just before halftime. As I recall, NBC Sports told me that there had been something like 37 cuts in their broadcast coverage of that, which means 37 changes of perspective. If you had 37 cuts in a 10-second or 15-second run in 3D, you would get sick because each of those cuts is very jarring to the eye. On the other hand, the way you shoot 3D is you choose the camera that's focusing on the guy coming towards you, and you do two or three cuts, and you have a long shot that shows the sense of perspective. If you shoot 3D that way, you're not going to get sick.
Do you think that there's going to be a day when we're going to see glasses that work with all TV sets with 3D or all TV services with 3D? I know there are a couple of companies, fashion glass companies, that are coming out now or will be this holiday season with 3D models. And I've heard of companies like Monster Cable who've also come out with what they call universal usage 3D glasses.
Yes. You'll see it, and you'll see it fairly fast. There's two types of glasses. There's passive glasses, which is what you get in the theaters. They're cheap. They're plastic. They aren't red and green cardboard, unlike the old ones. They are instead gray, and they look like Ray-Ban Wayfarers. Those glasses will work with anything that's transmitted sort of the passive glasses encoding. They're polarized. So you one polarization goes up and down, one goes across. You see different pictures interlaced with your two different eyes. That's universal to anything that's transmitted in a polarized format. For TV, right now, active glasses are used, where there's a shutter that flicks right eye and left eye on at incredible speeds, hundreds of times per second. Each of those has a code that's unique to a TV, just like each remote control has a code that's unique to a TV. My guess is that within a year you're going to see universal glasses that are available on the aftermarket, because just as when you buy when you get a new cable box, the remote there, you can train to work with your TV. All you have to do is re-engineer the frequencies. So my guess is that that problem is going to be addressed fairly quickly.
There's also been a little back and forth about the idea of 3D where you don't need glasses whatsoever. Toshiba is going to introduce next month in Japan their own glasses-free 3D set model. At the Paul Kagan conference you were at 2 weeks ago, a company called 3D Fusion came out with their own TV set where you didn't need the glasses. And yesterday at another conference here in New York, another company, independent company, came forward with their own model. What do you think about this movement to glasses-free 3D? I mean, there are people like Jeffrey Katzenberg, the head of DreamWorks Animation, who thinks this is going to be like several years away. Some people say 5-10 years away. Some people think it's around the corner. What's your perspective on this?
Well, glasses-free TV can work right now for certain applications. There's been a dramatic acceleration in the technology since I started working in this area just over a year ago. When we first looked at Auto Stereo, which is glasses-free 3D TV, at a research lab in California last December, you literally had to stand behind a tape on the floor, and if you moved at all, you lost the effect. Now they're using very fancy things called lenticular filters, and you can get about 170-degree viewing range on these TVs. However, they look like, in terms of a home application, they look like standard def television as opposed to HD television, or worse than standard def. Sometimes, if you're at the wrong angle, it can look like you're watching TV through a screen door. What these are right now is advertising applications. They will work wonderfully in a mall, over an escalator, at FedEx Field. There are little TV screens over urinals. For fixed applications, like an iPhone-type TV video screen where you're watching it pretty much always from a couple feet away and you're not moving your head a lot, they're not going to be ready for home use for, I'm in the 5 to 10 year camp. Others would say a little faster. Given the speed of improvement, I may be on the long end, but I would say at least 5 years. And even then, because every time you put one of these lenticular filters on, you cut the resolution isn't going to be as good as a TV set that you're watching with 3D glasses. What you've got with the high-end 3D sets that you get now is two 1080p signals coming in simultaneously. So it's basically two perfect HD signals coming in simultaneously that you're watching. So it's an incredible picture. Auto Stereo isn't going to get to that for years and years and years.
Frank Hawkins from Scalar Media, our guest on Tomorrow We Televise for Friday, November afternoon here in New York. Simon Applebaum live with you on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Frank on 3D TV, get it in at 1-646-652-2906. That's 1-646-652-2906, or get into our chat line. So here's the game plan that you came up with and you showcased 2 weeks ago before that Paul Kagan conference crowd about how 3D can grow dramatically and become a mainstream must-see TV, if you will. And I'll go through it and then bullet point one or two. One, find visionaries who are willing to produce original work, original programming. Two, raise the eyeballs, the consumer adoption of 3D sets. Three, educate consumers better, especially about the 3D glass situation. Four, improve the infrastructure. Run 2D and 3D on the same cable system or satellite system. Five, expand the pool of production talent who can do 3D and do it regularly. Six, have producers shoot sports events live in both 2D and 3D formats and do them as separate editions. Here's another one. Get more funding sources and brainstorming to back new programming channels and services. Equipment must be standardized. Glasses, sets, the whole process up and down the line. And finally, come up with innovative ways to put the message across that you, the public, miss something if you don't see programming in 3D. Right now, what do you think is the most important?
I think that right now the most important would be twofold. Number one, consumer education. Not so much that you missed something if you didn't see it in 3D, but understanding that these 3D sets that are out there are also 2D TV sets and the best 2D sets around, and urging people to future-proof by buying a 3D-capable TV set. Those sets aren't going to go obsolete. They just flat out aren't going to go obsolete within the average lifetime of a TV, which is 8 to 10 years. That educational message will drive the eyeballs. Once you drive the eyeballs, then the return on shooting a 3D program improves. Now, shooting a 3D program is still going to be expensive because the best you're going to get to with most shows is a partially redundant shoot. The way you shoot sports and why it's so inefficient is you've got 12 cameras that are out there, 12, 14 cameras that are out there to shoot the 2D version. You need a lot of cameras because you do so much cutting. You're going to have to put in 5 to 6 additional cameras that are 3D. You may be able to duplicate some, but some locations, but you're not going to be able to duplicate all. So that parallel production gets very pricey. It gets to, you know, $400,000 a day or something like that to shoot sports. But where you'll be able to really make inroads in bringing down production costs is in studio programming. Scripted shows, reality shows, a talk show, not Conan, despite the fact that you mentioned him earlier, but a talk show has just done a test shoot in 3D. Can't say anything more than that, except they liked the 3D footage, and they're thinking about
how
they do it.
By the way, sorry to interrupt you, Frank, but why not Conan?
Conan, my number, well, you can reach me through Simon, Conan, if you're listening. We would love to do it. And we're reaching out to all sorts of people like that. I think that Conan would be tremendous. I can see him doing in the year 2020 instead of in the year 2000, his old shtick on NBC, in 3D. Those sorts of shoots you can do with an array that duplicates more. There was a concert shot here that's going to be announced for DirecTV fairly soon, shot here in New York City about a month ago, that had a 12-camera 2D array. 5 of those cameras were also 3D, so they were shooting, in essence, simultaneously, the 2D and 3D versions, and they're going to do separate cuts of it. That brings your production costs down a lot, and that generates the pipeline. So that's piece two that's important, and getting people comfortable with doing that, the producers, the directors, comfortable with doing that will bring your production costs down. Now, in the short run, until the money that you get by having a lot of eyeballs for advertising and or for sub fees gets big enough and the costs come down enough, you're still going to have a funding gap. And that is why we and others in the industry are working on financing sources. What happened in the movie industry was something called DCIP, Digital Cinema Implementation Program. Essentially, by switching to digital theaters, you did two things. Number one is you reduced your costs if you're the studios and the theaters because you no longer had to ship 35-millimeter prints back and forth. And that, over the course of a year, saves significant money. And number two is you made your theaters 3D capable because the digital files can be 3D. But no one wanted to invest in that because it's an immediate capital expenditure that you recover only over time. So they came up with this essentially debt funding model where each party contributes towards repayment of the debt in accordance with its savings, and there's, as a result, a very, very rapid transition to digital cinema that's underway right now. The
Frank,
same
how close
sort
are we to having a similar model for television, particularly one where whatever the funding source is, whether it's venture capital or angel investors or some independent private equity or whatever source you have, when can something like this happen for television that can fund a particularly original content?
Bridge Fund, the Gap, call me back in about 3 or 4 weeks, and I hope to have a better answer for you. But there are active discussions ongoing, and I think it's going to come fairly quickly.
In the time we have left, ESPN 3D is on the air. N3D, the DirecTV original programming channel, is on the air. Discovery will launch its network with Sony and IMAX, its 3D service, early next year. We don't have an exact date. But Tom Cosgrove, the head of that channel, has been saying that he thinks in a couple of years we could have as many as 20 or 30 3D television networks. And that ultimately, he didn't say it, but some people have suggested it, for 3D to be embraced by all of us, by all the public, it has to go the same way as HD, where you conclude, hey, I can watch any kind of show in 3D. When do you think we're going to get to that point? Is it the next couple of years? Is it 5-10 years down the road?
3 to 5 years. 3 to 5 years. I think that Mr. Cosgrove is right in terms of his guess as to how many channels there will be out there fairly quickly. My guess is that media conglomerates will soon embrace the idea of doing a sort of compilation channel. Universal, NBC Universal did it with HD, with Universal HD, where they had shows that were shot for USA, for Sci-Fi, and for NBC in HD. And they basically put them all together as a premium service. I think you'll start to see those fairly quickly. That's essentially what Discovery is. I think you'll start to see an international marketplace developing fairly quickly. BSkyB, satellite broadcasting in the UK, launched a full-time 3D channel on October 1st of this year. Foxtel in Australia launched a full-time channel on November 1st, and I'll actually be, I hope, learning a lot more than that since I have to give a speech in Australia next week. There are similar things that are underway in Japan and Korea. Australia is experimenting with over-the-air 3D by Channel 7, 9 Network, and Channel 10 down there on digital channels. So eventually that may come here as well. It's running sort of into an FCC initiative to reclaim a lot of that spectrum, but it's a potential use of additional spectrum that TV stations have. I think that you'll see a fairly rapid development of content over the next couple of years, and I think that one of the tasks that we at Scalar Media are trying to do is make sure that the content gets spread around, that it's not all sports content, that it is a wide variety to appeal to all different age groups and so on, that there's something for the teenage boys who are gamers, that there's something for the kids who like cartoons, that there's something for the wives and women. And I will note that there were two fashion shows in Paris that were shot in 3D during Paris Fashion Week, Dior and Jean-Paul Gaultier. They look tremendous in 3D, and I think you'll be seeing them on or seeing versions of those shows on TV fairly soon. There's 3D movies that are going to start being released on a pay-per-view basis fairly quickly. There's series that are being shot in 3D. Discovery is commissioning a ton of series. DirecTV is commissioning series from some channels as well. So I think that it's going to come fairly quickly, and I think that it's going to come at different rates for different types of programming, but within a few years, within 3 to 5 years, pretty much anything you want is going to be available in 3D.
If you want to know about Scalar Media and what Frank's company is up to, here's where you go on the web. It's www.scalarmedia.com. It's www.scalarmedia.com. And the Versus coverage in 3D of the Oregon, California football game is tomorrow night. You can see it if you have a 3D set and 3D glasses on Fios Systems Coast to Coast. That's Fios TV from Verizon. Also on select systems of Cox, Time Warner Cable, Bright House Networks, and Comcast. Frank Hawkins from Scalar Media, thanks for joining us. And if this TV project does come together after Thanksgiving, as you suggest, we would love to have either you or somebody who's going to head this project up on the program and talk about it. We have not seen the last of 3D.
Thank you very much, Simon. It's a pleasure talking with you. Look forward to catching up soon.
Same here. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
Same to you.
Frank Hawkins from Scalar Media joining us live from New York. When we come back, say goodbye to Rubicon on AMC. We'll tell you why in our Up as an Update segment. But right now, at the bottom of the hour, we pause for web identification. This is the big home for Internet Radio, where over 7 million listeners around the world catch it. It's www.blogtalkradio.com. As we said, more than 7 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Fly Lady and Friends with Maria Chili. The Fly Lady is cooking. You can catch her in action Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. Thanks for joining us on this November Friday afternoon. And now it's time for Up as an Update, where we catch up on some of the guests and topics that we have had on this program. In August, AMC premiered Rubicon, an interesting series that had a 24 clandestine feel to it. It was put together by Henry Bromwell, the Emmy Award-winning writer and executive producer of such shows as I'll Fly Away and Homicide: Life on the Street. Henry was on our program a week after Rubicon's premiere. Well, there will not be a second season of Rubicon. Here's why. The show did well in total households. It premiered with more than 2 million homes until The Walking Dead premiered 2 weeks ago. It was the highest series premiere for an original program on AMC to date. And over the course of its 13-episode run, Rubicon averaged about 1.6 million viewers. The problem was, not many of them were in the coveted 18 to 34 demographic. Less than 500,000 were in that bracket. And because of that, AMC canceled the show. And already there's been a furor in some areas of the blogosphere about it. I've seen some email on various websites saying, bring the show back. It needs another chance, second chance. Right now it doesn't look good, but at least you got to give AMC credit for putting the show on in the first place. And so far, AMC's track record has been quite good. Out of four original series that the network has put on since Mad Men launched 4 years ago, three are around. And Walking Dead has just been renewed for a second 13-episode season. And another bit of Up for you. Last week on this program, last Friday to be exact, we had Damian Kindler, the creator and executive producer of Sanctuary, running Friday nights at 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time on Sci-Fi. When we had him on, he talked about the charity that he, star Amanda Tapping, and director Martin Wood have put together called Sanctuary for Kids. And he challenged other TV series to do the same type of charity work, either for kids or for other members of society or on other social issues of society. We haven't heard yet from other TV series, but the invitation is open. And if any of you in our listening audience know of any TV series that are doing some very interesting charity work along the lines of Sanctuary for Kids, let us know and we will highlight it. And once again, if you want more details about that project done by Damian, Amanda, and Martin, here's where you go on the web, www.sanctuaryforkids.org. That's www.sanctuaryforkids.org. Next week, we've got a pair of interesting episodes for you. On Monday, we have an episode you might call The Michael Show. Here's why. Our guests are both have Michael as their first name. And secondly, they have shows premiering next week, one on Monday, one on Tuesday, and we'll feature them in that order. First up on Monday, Michael Cantor. The new version of the game show 1 vs. 100 premieres on GSN that night at 7 p.m. It is hosted by Carrie Ananava, the former Fly Girl, now one of the judges on Dancing with the Stars, having a record-breaking new season on ABC. Michael Cantor, the executive producer of 1 vs. 100, will be our first guest on Monday. And up second, Michael Sir, he is the creator and executive producer of the new TBS dramedy, Gloria Days. It will start at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time Tuesday night, right before Conan, and he'll talk about what it's like to do an Animal House kind of show. Michael Sir, Michael Cantor, next Monday, exclusively right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And then on Friday, we have a very unusual episode for you. Normally, we don't feature celebrities on this program unless they were involved in a creative way with the show, as a creator, as an executive producer, and so on. We've had quite a few over our three-plus year run. Well, we have somebody who is just a co-star. But what a co-star. If you look like Carly on Nickelodeon, or somebody does, have them tune in a week from today, because we've got the man who plays Spencer, Jerry Traynor, will join us live in an exclusive interview on Internet Radio, specifically Blog Talk Radio. He is also the lead voice for Tough Puppy, the new popular Saturday morning cartoon on Nickelodeon created by Butch Hartman of Fairly Odd Parents fame. Jerry Traynor, Spencer and I, Carly, a week from today, here on Tomorrow We Televise. For all you iCarly fans out there, don't miss it. If you missed any part of today's episode about 3D, want to catch up on other episodes you missed, go to our homepage. It's www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. You can also check us out on podcast. Nearly 10,000 downloads this month. You can catch us on iTunes.com, Zoom.net. Other websites arranged by the fine folks at Sonobite. We're a featured podcast on TiVo. We're also available to schools around the country through Cable in the Classroom. The podcast address there is www.ciconline.org/podcast. That's www.ciconline.org/podcast. One other thing before we say goodbye for the day, I want to thank the folks at Digital Hollywood New York, Victor Harwood and crew, for a wonderful time doing their first ever fall conference here in New York. It was my pleasure to moderate a panel yesterday afternoon with some terrific people from companies like Petromedia Holdings, Black Arrow, and such. So I want to again thank Victor Harwood and the crew at Digital Hollywood for a terrific first fall conference here in New York, which is wrapping up in the next 2 hours. So hopefully Digital Hollywood New York will be a fall outing here in the Big Apple for many, many years to come. Congratulations, Victor. Also, congratulations to Blog Talk Radio, the place where you're hearing this program, for a brand new look that premiered this week. It's easier to navigate for those of you listening to Blog Talk Radio. It's easier to get online as a listener. So thank you, BTR, and all the crew for upgrading the website and making it look so great and used so well. Once again, www.blogtalkradio.com/SimonApple04. That's our homepage. Check out our podcast. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about today's interesting episode about 3D television and where it's going? What do you think about where TV is going? Do you have an idea for an ongoing feature or show to know? Is there a favorite TV show you think doesn't get enough publicity and you'd like to see it get some? Email me at simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you are emailing from. If you have a show to know suggestion, put down your email, the name of the show, the network it's on, a few thoughts about why you think it deserves the attention, and if we use your suggestion on the air, of course, you get the credit. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, we love what you have to say, so say it. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Hillary Luong and Matt Vader. Podcast distribution provided by Sonobite. Words to your ears. For more, serve sonobite.com. Podcast director and theme music composer, Philip Salisbury. For Tomorrow We'll Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a wonderful weekend. We will catch you with the folks, Michael, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.